Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and the deadly myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, as well as with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms, through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion is toll-free, 877-300-7645. The news today is similar to the news on many days. The first headline from the BBC reads, "Today, Muslims killed 30 of their own in two explosions outside of an Iraqi mosque north of Baghdad." This time it was Shias murdering Sunnis in Iraq. Yesterday, a Sunni suicide bomber killed 10 outside of a Shia mosque in Kirkuk. Hours before that, 12 Shias were murdered by a Sunni suicide bomber in a Shia district of Baghdad. They're killing each other. Now, should we care that they're murdering each other? In a way, yes, I suppose. The reason I think we should care is that in the case of Iraq, we made it so. We created the Iraq that is torn in the midst of a civil war. We armed both sides. We made certain that the Iraq that we left behind would display this kind of Muslim-on-Muslim violence. Now, if it's just the religion of Islam all by its own, doing what it does best without any involvement from our country or from the West, then Muslims killing Muslims might not be such a big deal. After all, if they're killing one another, they're not killing others. But we made this possible. Our invasion of Iraq created the climate of terrorism. It was not, if the invasion of Iraq was to go to war against terrorism, as it was stated, then that war backfired. Because a country that was not plagued by terrorism is now the country most plagued by terrorism. So if you're a patriot, you may want to chew on that for a while. We move to the next headline. In Pakistan, two bombs killed 13 outside of two mosques along the border with Afghanistan. 30 were mutilated. Now, you may hear that and you say, well, once again, it's Muslims killing Muslims at the source of Islam, the mosque, just as it was in Iraq. And you may say, so if they're killing one another, they can't kill us. And what hope is there for them anyway in a country ravaged by Islam, poisoned by Islam, where there is no opportunity for anyone to choose anything other than Islam, at least, and live through it? Well, once again, we facilitated this terror. We did so by first using the Taliban, which was an agency of the Pakistani government, to terrorize the Afghani people because we wanted to give the Soviet-backed government a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam. And then after building and using the Taliban, we decided later we would go to war against them, all the while supplying arms to Pakistan while fighting one of Pakistan's agencies. And our invasion of Afghanistan has created this monster now where Afghanis and Pakistanis are at war with one another. When you aid and abet murder, you can't just look at murder as if it's those people far away killing themselves. What does this have to do with us? Hello, Larry. I'm glad you're with us this morning. Sad news that the scenarios that the United States is principally guilty of creating, where we, based upon outright lies, invaded two countries and made bad situations in those countries infinitely worse, and America far more susceptible to being destroyed by these foes than ever before.
And I would say, what's new? What's new?
Yeah, what's new?
This is the ongoing, you know, we're going to invade here. We're going to spread democracy. We're going to free the hell out of you people. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. You know, when the Greeks tried to compel democracy, when they tried to force choice on the surrounding nations. And the Delian League was created entirely for political reasons. It was not created because the Greeks thought that their political decisions were more noble, valid. You know, they weren't indoctrinated like we Americans have been, where we consider democracy to be godly, where we consider ourselves to be superior to other countries because we embrace democracy. Democracy has only existed for any length of time in two places on Earth. One is the most ruthless country, probably in human history, which would be Sparta, where they enslaved all of the neighboring populations to do all of their work, brutally enslaving them, so that they themselves could spend all of their time beating their women and training their sons to be warriors. That would be Sparta.
Right. Yeah.
And the other example speaks of we're going to force you, compel you to be democratic whether you want it or not. The other example is the Delian League, born out of Greece. This was a political mandate. And the purpose of the Delian League was not to provide the virtues of something that the Greeks valued upon the neighboring islands and coastlands. It was that the Greeks had done so many things to tweak the nose of the Persians that they wanted a buffer zone. They wanted other people to be in league with them that would be that would buffer the ongoing assaults of the Persians. And so they compelled their political system of democracy on the neighboring coastlines and islands, and it failed miserably. So we have a historical precedent for what the United States is attempting to do, and it does not work. By the way, Larry, was America founded, let's forget about what America is now, was America founded as a democracy?
Oh, absolutely not. That's the antithesis of freedom, because it's where 51% of the people can put 49% of the people into slavery.
That's
now, this
correct.
Was a republic, and it was supposed to be a nation of laws. And, of course, today, you know, we look at our ruling class, and they look more like royalty to me.
We are particularly. Yeah, in fact, the United States government, more and more, is ignoring its own constitution. It kills without due process through its drones systems, and no one is being held accountable.
Among other things.
It does wiretaps on the media without any justification. It turns its taxing agency onto political foes. It lies and therefore commits perjury with reckless abandon. The United States government now acts, as do the politicians that manage it, as if those laws that they impose on others don't apply to them.
Oh, that's right. I mean, that's where we're at. We all see it. You know, the king has no clothing.
Yeah. You know, if you were to go back 30 years, maybe 40 years, somewhere in that period of time, no one spoke of democracy being the great guiding light of America. It was published, taught in the schools and in the media that America was a republic. And even the U.S. military's training materials spoke of why the Founding Fathers were so opposed to democracy. You know, it is the tyranny of the majority. And so you don't have to go back all that far to the point where there was a realization that democracy is bad and that it almost always leads to oppression. In the case of America right now, we are witnessing a democracy at work. It is what is killing our economy, which is killing the nation, which is the majority who are now recipients of government handouts are singling out the minority to confiscate their money. And so we're witnessing it now play out in its destruction of our economy.
I have to say, I never thought I'd see the day that I looked at the president and you know, and the press corps, really, too, and where I could see them so clearly, hand in glove, working with each other to promote tyranny.
Right. And they are.
I thought I'd see it. I know they are. I'd see that day.
And it's under this notion of misinforming and beguiling, using propaganda, if you will, towards the American people. For example, one of the great confiscations of freedom, therefore the imposition of tyranny, was the Patriot Act. So much of what we do comes under the guise of democracy, which is, again, a means to impose tyranny. And so it's our vocabulary that's being corrupted. It's our morals that is being corrupted. It's our judgment that is being corrupted. And so much of it is just garbage in, garbage out. People don't even have access to, at least easily, valid information from which to exercise good judgment, even if they were prone to do so. But, of course, in political correctness, they aren't prone to exercise good judgment. Mutually exclusive options seem valid.
You know, I'm in an engine business, mm-hmm. and, you know, I buy and sell engines for a living. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm getting more and more calls from, you know, people that are on the, you know, more or less the bottom rung of society. They're the working poor.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, and they're telling me, well, it's going to be 2 or 3 weeks before I can buy this engine. Can you hold it for me? They've cut my hours at work.
You're right.
And, of course, we knew directly that was going to happen with the Obamacare, didn't we?
Right. Matter of fact, as we tried to renew our policies for our employees at our farm, what we found is that we had to hugely reduce the level of support for our employees in terms of their health care, and yet we're still paying vastly more money for inferior coverage, all as a direct result of Obama. Together we have Larry on the phone with us this morning. Larry, there was an interesting comment in the news that strikes a chord with something you and I were talking about, which is that there is a sizable difference between a democracy and a republic. In a republic, there would be no discussion on gun control. The Constitution says that because a militia is essential to freedom, that the right to own, bear arms, to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And so in a republic, there would be no discussion on invalidating the Constitution.
No matter what an opinion poll said.
Not a matter. It doesn't matter that that the framers of the country said this is essential because otherwise governments become tyrannical. And that's what they said. Unless the people themselves can keep and bear arms, and it doesn't have any limit on arms, and they're talking about militias here, so these would be military-type weapons, that unless the people can, without interference, keep and bear military-type weapons, then there will be no freedom. That's what the amendment to the Constitution says. So in a republic, there would be no discussion on it. Now, we have ceased to be a republic because we no longer care about the U.S. Constitution. And therefore, the result is, in a democracy, the majority of Americans now wants to put very substantial restrictions. Sometimes upwards of 90% of the population want to put substantial restrictions on people's right to keep and bear arms. And therefore, that is the difference between a democracy and a republic. And in the case of those, the majority, whatever they may be, depending on how severe the interference is with the Constitution, the reason that it's a majority is because the majority is now a net beneficiary of government handouts. And they want to make certain that the minority that they are robbing, that they are right, that they can't defend themselves, that they can't say no. That if the only guns are owned by the government that they are now dependent upon, stealing money from others, if they're the only ones that are armed, then there is no end to their benefits so long as there is still money to confiscate. And so while they may not have thought through the whole process, that's what they're saying.
They're in a lot of trouble once they kill the chicken, you know.
You know, that's exactly. You know, you can, what do they say? You can shear the sheep many times, but you can only slaughter it once.
Yeah.
You know, and we are to the point where we have overconfiscated the money of those who are productive, and we have over-rewarded those who are unproductive to the point that our economy has reached this level where it's now $17 trillion in debt, and we're on the cusp of not being able to service our debt.
When he took over, what was it, $7 trillion in debt? Something like that.
He's been bad, but it's over his 5 years in office, he's averaged about $1.2 trillion for each of those 5 years. So he's added about $6.5 to $7 trillion to the overall debt.
It was around 10. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, it was around 10. Now, in all fairness, because I'm not a advocate for the other side either, the transition from horrible deficits to actually a few years of modest surpluses back to gargantuan deficits was George W. Bush. So the first year of Obama, where the $7 trillion is put on his presidency, it wasn't his budget. It was the budget of George W. Bush. So if you really want to look at who was the worst, George W. Bush or Obama in terms of devastating America's economy, Bush was worse in terms of deficits than Obama.
No, you throw in Obamacare, though, and then...
If you look at the legacy, and I would agree, if you look at the legacy, while Bush's first judicial act, which was of any significance, which was his... writer to the Medicare and Medicaid programs whereby prescription medicines would be included. The consequence of that,
horrible idea.
Right, the consequence of that was many hundreds of billions of dollars of added cost to an already bankrupt and immoral Ponzi scheme. And so if you compare that to Obama increasing by 50% the number of participants in Medicaid, and then this amnesty bill that they are proposing, where we would create another 11 million potential participants, long term, it will be more devastating than Bush.
Have you ever
Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We are here with Larry. Turning to other bombs in the news, Larry, Reuters is reporting that a car bomb killed at least three people outside of a hospital in the Libyan city of Benghazi. The quote from one of the victims says, "This is the flesh of our sons. This is what the militias have given us," said one witness at the scene. You know, we empowered the takeover of Libya, which was being run by an essentially useless syphilitic, to be now controlled by jihadists. It's a whole mob of Islamic terrorist organizations that now control the country. There was one report
that came out. We've given plenty of stingers, too. I understand about 10,000 of them.
Yes, we have. And guess what they'll do with those?
Oh,
the same. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Now the
laugh. I mean, it's the consequences are bad.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny though. I love the term stinger. The stinger is the term that Paul used. It's also the term that Yahusha used to describe Satan's ability control people. It's the stinger or the poison at the end of the prod or goad. So when Paul was mushing along on the road to Damascus, when he met Satan there, Satan said, you know, it's going to be really hard to rebel against my goad, the stinger at the end of a sharp-pointed stick. And then later, in his second letter to Corinth, he said that the thorn in his side was actually a stinger. It's the same stinger at the end of the goad, which is a sharp-pointed instrument to control people and animals. He said that stinger in his side was, in fact, one of Satan's demons, that he was demon-possessed. Yahusha, speaking of this, says that it is the scorpion stinger. He says that metaphorically, that is the means that Satan uses to poison and intoxicate and incapacitate and control individuals so that he can devour them. And so the stinger is an interesting title for this. One of the things that's also interesting about the car bombs, rash of car bombs that have taken place in Libya, is that one of them was actually, they say, the result of fishing explosives being accidentally detonated. What is the most moronic, counterproductive, and laziest way to fish?
You're talking about bombing?
Yeah, bombing. You use explosives. All the fish die, and they all come to the surface, and you just scoop them up. The problem is that that's the last time you can fish.
Because, no, that's a problem.
You kill everything. So, you know, it doesn't matter what happened here. It was stupid. A roadside bomb in southern Afghanistan has killed at least 10 civilians, most of which were women and children. The vehicle the victims were traveling in was hit by an improvised explosive device, of course, perpetrated by Muslims upon Muslims. It is a lovely situation that they have built for themselves. Now, it's not to say that the conditions in Afghanistan were lovely before the American invasion. The Taliban created a hellish environment for women. But everything that is known by anyone who is privy to what's happening in Afghanistan say that the treatment of women in Afghanistan now is far worse than it was under the Taliban. So really all we did is make the situations worse for women, and now terrorism, which did not exist there, is rife. Seems like we're in a rut in doing this.
Well, Reuters, one of the things that really upset me, I remember, was I said, what are we doing over there? You know, because I saw this news article where a woman, for whatever reason, she was giving 200 lashes, 200 lashes. That's going to come close to killing you to begin with. And then at the end of that 200 lashes, she was taken out and shot in the back of the head. Well, that'll teach her never to do that again.
It is the Stockholm Syndrome. In fact, I was just reading about the Stockholm Syndrome in at the end of the first chapter of Paul's letter to the Galatians. There's a glaring example of the Stockholm Syndrome. We had a guest on this program many months ago that spoke of the Stockholm Syndrome as Muhammad's greatest achievement, that when he allowed Muslim men to abuse Muslim women, to imprison them when they saw fit, to beat them as they saw fit, and to kill them as they saw fit, then any brief pause in the abuse that women were suffering at the hands of Islamic men was seen as merciful. And so the men who were the perpetrators of horrible oppression were considered to be the defenders of these brief moments of liberation from torment. And it was the thing that caused Islam to flourish. It is also apparently the thing that caused Christianity, based upon Paul's letters, to flourish. He positions himself as a brute, as a savage man who imprisoned, bludgeoned, and who murdered the first Torah observant Jews who were following Yahusha. And when he stopped incarcerating them, when he stopped bludgeoning them, when he stopped murdering them, they said that he was to be glorified and he was praiseworthy. And so it is, again, the Stockholm Syndrome that we see in effect.
See that all over the world.
Yes, we do. It is a very common thing. It's even seen in America with the government continuing to overburden, overtask, rob its people, that the brief interludes where they're not doing horrible things, the government is glorified.
Yeah. You know, I was seeing today, Yada, that Jay Carney, you know, he's a spokesman. He's the guy they put up as the buffer between the liars so he can tell another lie. Mm-hmm. Is there a, you know, talking about Benghazi and the IRS and the AP scandals and all that. He says, Jay Carney, I dismiss the idea that these are scandals. Well, that's like dismissing the idea that water is wet. I mean, what is wrong with this guy?
Well, denial. Denial is one of the precepts of politics. You know, the president got caught lying multiple times on Benghazi, got caught with malfeasance related to the IRS, got caught inappropriately wiretapping the Associated Press. He had a series of...
On and on and on. I mean, you're talking about... And then he says, I was watching Obama today. I was reading a lot of Drudge, and one of the things that that he said was that, he found out when we found out. He read this stuff in a newspaper. He read these things in the newspaper. That was the first he knew of them.
It's certainly not true. Certainly not true with Benghazi. Certainly not true with Fast and Furious.
It's certainly not true with any of them.
It could be true with the IRS, whether or not the Cincinnati office was operating independently. You know, one of the things that I talked about on the IRS scandal, since it still has some life, that really does bother me. The reason that there was an investigation of these charities is the fact that there's a new class of charity. It used to be 501(c), and now there's a 4C designation, and there's been this incredibly increase, the geometric increase in the number of lobbying political groups that are claiming tax-exempt status. And I think the solution here isn't look into why conservative groups were targeted over liberal groups seeking this tax-exempt status.
Well, we know why that was.
The answer really isn't that at all. The answer is, since corporations, which are actually productive, versus political active groups, which are counterproductive, are taxed at 39%, we ought to lower the taxes and give tax-exempt status to corporations, which actually produce jobs and build things that have value, and we ought to tax these groups that are applying for tax exemption. Tax them 50% or 60%. We're providing exemptions to the very people who are destroying our economy, while we're overtaxing those who are providing benefits to the economy. That's the real issue, and no one seems to want to discuss that one.
Well, that's brilliant, but it's true. That's a brilliant deduction there. I mean, I didn't think of it, but
But that is our problem. The reason that politicians can't seem to make the right decision relative to taxation is that they're tax exempt. Now, one of the things that's also interesting is that the country in the worst shape now economically, in terms of economic trends in Europe, happens to be France. What did France do a year ago politically?
Raised their tax rate to 70%.
Right, because they elected a communist president, correct?
Yeah.
So the consequence of electing a communist president, whose mantra is what Obama wants to establish here, to each according to their need, from each according to their ability, and he imposed confiscatory taxes on the most productive French, the French economy is cratering faster than any economy in Europe.
Well, we're kind of seeing that in the G5s, where communism is more and more and more advanced and promoted. You know, it came out, I think it was yesterday, that Merkel over in Germany, she was involved in communist groups, you know.
Now, look at the United States. The United States was actually beginning to slowly emerge out of its recession. So what did Obama do? To get the debt ceiling increase, he demanded that the corporations and the most productive Americans have their taxes rate increased from 35% to 39%. That's excluding state taxes now. These are just federal income taxes, that they be increased from 35, which were already way too high, much higher than the rest of the world, to 39%, while also reestablishing the payroll taxes on others. And what happened to the economy?
It tanked again, and it's going to stay tanked. I think that's intentional, though. I think it's like you say, you know, the more people that you get dependent on the government, the more power government has, and the fewer people it has to answer to. They don't like answering to anyone for what they do.
Well, of course, the problem with that is there's only a very limited amount of time that you can play that game. So it might work for the next 3 years that Obama is in office, and it might even work for another 4 years after that. But if there is a end game here, and the end game with the game that they're playing is the utter destruction of the country, goes into anarchy and complete loss of sovereignty. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment.
Gardner.
To Shattering Myths. I'm surveying an article here that just repulses me. Larry, you know that I'm no fan of religion, that I view Islam as probably the greatest threat to the world today because it is so overtly focused on death and destruction and is so zealous in its application of death and destruction. I am concerned about Christendom because this false religion destroys a person's ability to think, and so long as people cease to be moral and can't think properly, that there is no way that they can defend themselves. And of course, I'm just disgusted that so many people have squandered their soul to such a pathetic lie. Judaism, though, is high on my list of religions that I despise. And today what we're seeing is tens of thousands of ultra-Orthodox Jews, these are the Haredi, that they're now protesting in Jerusalem. Now, it's a place they would not be able to protest. They wouldn't even be able to live there had it not been for the Israeli Defense Forces. And they're protesting the fact that they're now being drafted into the military along with everyone else. Now, I'm no fan of the military. I think America would be vastly safer if we did not have a military, or if our military was reduced by 90% than we are with our present application and size of our military, which is strangling the country financially and being misapplied. All you'd really have to do to keep America free is honor the Second Amendment, and it would be impossible for anyone to rob Americans of their freedom. So in Israel, they have a different situation. There's only about 6 million, 7 million Jews in Israel, and they're surrounded by hundreds of millions of Muslims who hate them and are armed to the teeth with American weapons ready to destroy them. And so they really do have a different situation relative to their military. But the Haredi, these ultra-Orthodox Jews, these guys that dress in their little religious costumes, they got their black hats, they got their beards, they got their white shirts
they play religious dress up.
Right, they play religious dress up, and they spend all all day being religious. They don't work. They live on a stipend from the government just to be religious.
Paid to run around and be religious.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They do. And they do not participate in any aspect of the government other than they want to be kingmaker. And until recently, Netanyahu had to bring them into his coalition for him to in the parliamentary system. And in the parliamentary system, the reason that the Haredi, the ultra-Orthodox Jews, got what they wanted, which was they didn't have to participate in the government, they didn't have to participate in the military, and they were paid to do nothing, and they're not taxed, is that they were the kingmakers enabling Netanyahu's party to rule Israel. One of the problems of the parliamentary system. Now, today they're out en masse. They're rioting. They're throwing missiles at police. They're torching stores and rubbish bins. They are throwing rocks. These Orthodox Jews are doing, and they're protesting. Their prayers are being constantly over and over again. And this says, quote, the Torah, which it has in brackets, Jewish Bible, above everything. And the army will not take our yeshiva pupils. Now, is there a single Orthodox Jew on the planet that's actually Torah observant?
No, not that I'm aware of. They follow the Talmud. I had a big debate on my page about that yesterday.
Great.
Yeah, with a Messianic Jew. Yeah. He was a friend of mine, by the way.
Yeah, Messianic Jews are really screwed up because they're what they do is they blend rabbinical Judaism, which is the Talmud, with Pauline doctrine, and it really, really screws them up. They've got a double dose of intoxication. But there isn't a single Orthodox Jew on the planet that is Torah observant. They don't pay any attention to the Torah. If they paid attention to the Torah, they would call God by his name, Yahweh. If they paid attention to the Torah, they would stop being religious. If they paid attention to the Torah, there would be no more rabbis, which is the basis of their religion, because there is no authorization for a rabbi in the Torah.
Authorization for any man to act as an intermediary in a relationship.
Right. You know? Nor is there any mandate for God's opposed to religion, but for people to not work and receive government subsidies for not doing anything, bit of it, and 100% of their prayers are rabbinic prayers that are written in the Mishnah and in the Talmud. So they are, and they are an absolute parasite. They're disgusting to look at. They're disgusting to listen to. They're an absolute parasite. And today they're rioting in Jerusalem, a place that they would have no access to, a place without the IDF. They wouldn't last 15 seconds before they would be slaughtered. And these idiots are protesting, chanting that they are Torah observant. And the idiots of the BBC call the Torah the Jewish Bible. Gee, I thought the Torah was Yahweh's testimony.
Words. Yeah, I did too.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that most...